Another week is over, another is about to begin, and here we are in the midst of all that, together, for another episode of our adventure. Hooray! My ex-wife told me once that she sold her soul to Satan because she was a control freak and she was starting to think that Christianity was a scam. Apparently, God was always giving her orders and deciding her fate. For example, he decided that she should be a beautiful blonde with a gorgeous hazel gaze. Yes, that ex-wife. He also decided that she should meet a woman who would chronicle each mundane moment of her life in excruciating but occasionally exaggerated detail. For example, we were not actually married. She said she didn't mind that so much, but she could never be sure if our love was special and spontaneous, or if we were simply the pretty playthings of some queer-baiting Sims player in the sky. And, well, it all got too much. So, she began sacrificing chickens to appease gruff but grateful goats, setting fire to the local church every now and again, celestial and serene, her bright eyes battling the flames, daring the world around her or any god in any sky to test her. And I waited at home under her spell with a list as long as one of my poems about my angsty teenhood, scrubbing and sorting our castle at her request because she was my god and I have never had a problem taking orders. I called that poem, originally it was just called Goats, but I renamed it Aberforth Rides Again, after a dear friend from my childhood. By the way, the time has come to tell you about my imaginary childhood friend. Yes, we've reached that episode, I suppose. Aberforth was a goat, and I have a sneaking suspicion he was a little bit evil, because he had a thing for attacking people and eating their spleens. Now, I don't know why, as a child, I imagined such fictional brutality. I'm still not really sure why, but there we are. That was my imaginary friend. You know, maybe it's a sign that I was possessed by a demon as a child, and I've, you know, buried that deep within myself and sort of erased the memories. I don't know, but so he was my childhood friend, and you know, so I really just thought, you know, this poem kind of reminds me of that time when I was very young and I thought I had this amazing evil goat sidekick and I was this supernatural, powerful being, you know, and that was a nice time. So I decided to use that for the title because I thought that'd be fun. I wrote it kind of about, not so much my ex-wife, because as I explained in the poem, we weren't actually married, but somebody that I did know, and I have written about her before. But she has the same name as a character that I don't actually remember inventing this character, by the way. I was going through some notebooks and I found some notes from, I think, my one of my screenwriting lectures, and so I had created this woman who turns to Satan after becoming tired of Christianity because she feels like God is mean and manipulative, and she doesn't like him very much anymore. So, you know, it's like that meme, you know, friendship with God is cancelled, the devil is my new best friend, or whatever. it was very that. And so she sells her soul to Satan, and she becomes just this very powerful person. And so I kind of imagined that, but, you know, a bit more romantically. But they had the character and the person have the same name, so I was like, well, what if she did that? And and what would happen? And, oh, wouldn't it be exciting if she was, you know, doing all these things and I was there in some capacity? So that's kind of how all that kind of came about. And I just sort of liked the sort of feminine energy of it, really. It was just very nice to just have a nice serene space, you know, a very girls only treehouse, you know. It should be noted, I only vaguely know what a spleen is or does, so I'm still not sure how, as a child, I imagined a very evil, angry goat who would eat people's spleens on my behalf. Because I can tell you right now, at that time, I didn't know anything about spleens. So I really feel that lends credibility to the maybe I was possessed by a demon theory. I'll keep you posted. Like a springtime sky, just as you are now, reading my diary, covered in my secrets that spill across the floor, staining your shirt as you discover too much. I have a problem. You. All the ways I was passionate about you, rage and rapture, from baby doll to bunny boiler, waking up shaken and scared because I am secretly, sincerely yours, and I'd like to be mine again. Stop fucking reading. I actually used to write my diary in other languages because I was paranoid about other people trying to read it. So I would just make sure that, you know, take those extra steps. You know, I'd have a lock on it and I would write it, you know, in these other ways. Because I said, you know, if they have to really fight to get into it, and then when they open it, it's not even in English, they're going to give up and they're not going to try and read it and find out all my secrets. But I mean, it's not like people would have been able to read it even if it was in English, because my handwriting's terrible. So, you know, I'm not even joking when I say that. My mum, my own mother, who has been my mother for, you know, the entire time I've been alive, she cannot really read my handwriting for the most part. And so, you know, she's the person who knows me best in the whole world. So, you know, a random stranger is going to be able to read it? I don't think so. But I was very paranoid, you know. So I would go to all these great lengths to try and stop people from finding out. But I don't keep a diary anymore, because I was never very good at keeping up with it anyway. You know, when I was a kid, I would sort of go days, sometimes even weeks, without filling it out. So I'm not good at it. So I don't really do that anymore. I just express myself through, you know, my work, I suppose. Which is good because, you know, I can sort of share that with people. And I think with a diary, because it's all just so direct, you know, whereas, you know, if I write a poem about how I'm feeling, I can just pretend I was just being artistic or whatever if it goes wrong. You can't do that with like a diary because, I mean, everybody knows and you feel a bit exposed and vulnerable. I don't really like that. So, but it reminds me of when I was a kid and there was this guy I liked at school. We had in our primary school, there was this garden at the back of the school and it could only be used by like the older students. So I went in there with him and I thought it was just the two of us. And I quite dramatically told him that I was in love with him and, you know, that we were going to be leaving school soon and we were going to different secondary schools and I loved him and I wanted him to know that and all this kind of stuff. And then it turned out we weren't actually alone and there were other people in there and they'd heard the whole thing and they were all laughing and stuff. And I had to do this whole thing. I was like, I was just pretending, like I was just, you know, practicing acting because, you know, that because I was doing like drama and stuff at the time. And I was like, you know, I'm sorry that you guys don't appreciate true like entertainment and art and ad-libbing, but you know, that's what I was doing. It was a performance. I don't love this man. I don't care for him. And I don't know. I don't think I carried it off. I'm going to be real. I think maybe people knew, but to be fair, I was 11. So I don't think anyone was really expecting like some Meryl Streep realness, but I think from that moment, I was just very particular about, I am never going to let anybody know how I feel about anything ever. Like, I will always leave room for myself to be able to say, it's a prank, bro, or it's something I'm, you know, it's a creative thing, it's not real, you know, because I don't want to be in that situation where I have to admit, okay, I got my feelings hurt, here I am, Boo Boo the Fool, it is what it is. And I mean, I don't know, it's fucked up. I kind of always feel like everything is a prank or a scam. I don't really trust the whole situation, I don't know. Or maybe I do, and I'm just pretending right now, and this is all an elaborate performance too. Guess you'll never know. There you go, Miss Mortality. Missed in many ways by many that you never dared to dream would hold you in their hearts for so long. Memorialized in public pixels that mean many things to many minds. And I'm reminded of weeping at my birthday party that you could never attend, though I never thought to invite you. When I was, I want to say 20, but I could be wrong. I feel like I was 20. I don't know. I think so. Or maybe 21. I can't remember. It was one of those two. I was either 20 or I was 21. And it was my birthday. Anyway, I was out with my family for my birthday. We were going out for dinner. And my family are very particular about having phones out on the table at dinner. They're very old-fashioned like that. But it was my birthday, so I was like, I want to take a picture and put it on social media because that's what you do. And so I took a picture and I went to put it on Facebook because, you know, that was before we realized that Facebook was stealing all of our data. So I didn't feel that that was weird. So I open it up, the app, and I suddenly see all these people leaving like condolence messages on the page of this girl that I went to school with. And I was like, what the fuck? So I clicked on her page and there was just so many people leaving all these messages about her having died. And I still to this day, like, I don't know why I reacted the way I did. I mean, I think I know, but I mean, I could be wrong. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. But I just started crying. I wasn't particularly close to this girl. In fact, we had had quite a few arguments. I didn't hate her, but I didn't like particularly, like, we weren't friends, but I didn't hate her or anything. But I was just sitting there crying and everyone's asking me why, and I just kept pointing at my phone. And I mean, I think it was because you expect older people in your life to die. You don't like to think about it, of course, but it makes sense because humans only live so long. And so while it may not be pleasant to think about, you can at least feel somewhat prepared when somebody older than you dies. But somebody who's your age, it just feels wrong. I know it's like really self-absorbed and self-centered, but it kind of made me think, you know, that was only like, it felt like 30 seconds. I feel like I've been alive for like 30 seconds. And she probably felt like that too. And now she's gone. What the fuck? You know? And it just felt very, it was like terrifying. And it just really made me think, what do I do now? How do I, you know? And like, I was upset. I was like, you know, I'm never gonna see her again. What now? But, you know, then I was kind of thinking, well, she wasn't your friend. You know, she was someone that you knew, kind of. You'd been in classes together, but you hadn't spoken to her in like 4 or 5 years. And that's not a reflection on her or really on you. But it's just, it was confusing to me why I was so upset about somebody that, you know, wasn't a major part of who I was. But I think I understand it a bit better now. You know, it was, you know, it was a lot to deal with. I don't know. Anyway, I was thinking about her the other day because she has, she still has her Facebook page available. And so do some other people that I know that have since died. There's another girl who died as well a couple of years ago. And she was, at the time, the age I am now. And occasionally, their profiles will pop up on my newsfeed because someone will have tagged them in something, or someone will have shared something that their page is connected to, or something like that. And so that's quite a weird thing now. And I think that's something that people in generations before us will not have experienced, obviously. And some of them may not even believe that this is a real thing that can happen. But when a page is memorialized, it stays on Facebook, right? So, you know, people will still show up in your memories on Facebook, even though they're dead. If somebody tags them in a post, it will still come up on your feed if you're friends with both of them, even if they're dead. And so it's kind of strange to almost to watch people still interacting with the people that they've lost, even though they're gone. And I guess I was just thinking about that, so I wrote about it. It was just kind of weird because somebody that I know tagged this girl in, you know how sometimes on Facebook people will tag you in, like, you know those sales things where people like sell like some kind of makeup or candles or weight loss thing, and, you know, sort of convince themselves it's a small business and things like that, and they tag everybody on their friends list and say, oh, look, I'm having a sale, please buy this thing, because, you know, I've got an upline who's very angrily private messaging me about the fact that I haven't spent enough this month or whatever. And so they tag everyone they know and they add everyone to a group or whatever and try and sort of convince you to buy stuff. It was one of those. And so someone tagged this girl in this post and I'm like, bruh, she's... Anyway. And it was awkward. And I was like, right. Because I was tagged in the post too. And I just thought, oh no. Oh no, no, no. Because suddenly I'm tagged in this too. And they're tagged in it. And I'm like, I hope whoever has access to the page for the memorial thing doesn't see that, because that's wildly disrespectful. But I guess it's just weird how someone's online presence now just like lives on even when they're not there. Because, I mean, in one way that's a good thing, because you can look back and you can see it, and you know, it's nice for their families and their friends, I suppose. But on the other, I mean, awkward things like that can happen, you know. I just hope that when I die, if someone decides to memorialize my Facebook page, that, you know, they won't keep like tagging me in like Minions memes and things like that. You know, give me some dignity after I go, for the love of God. You know what, I might actually put in my will that no one is allowed to memorialize my Facebook page. It has to be shut down when I die. And the only thing that will be left standing is like my website or something. I don't know. We'll see. It depends. You nervously call your mother-in-law's racism casual, because she teaches at the local primary and she volunteers at the Scouts with your aunt, who still says half-caste no matter how many times you slap her hand like she's a naughty dog that's done a piss in the kitchen. To you, they are casual, 80s comedy characters, political correctness gone sane, safe. Oh, what are you like, type of racism. thinks black hair is beautiful but crosses the street when she sees a black man type of racism. But it's not like that. Just saying what everybody thinks type of racism. Just wanting Britain to be British type of racism. Casual, cuddly, can't tell her off because she's from a different kind of time kind of racism. You tell yourself it's not really racism. It's not. Of course. No, you see, we know that racism is only real when a sentence does not begin with, "I'm not racist, but..." We know that racism is only real when it's found in rallies with a fascist frontman, as charismatic as he is cringeworthy, but somehow adored. Because, well, you know, he's saying what everyone thinks. He's saying it how it really is. He says he wants Britain to be British again. But he's surrounded by thugs, and that's the difference. That is absolutely what makes the difference. Red on his banners to tell you where he comes from. Red on the floor to tell us where he intends to send us. Also, there's milkshake. That's another dead giveaway that you are actually, in fact, in the depths of very real racism. Not at all like your aunt, definitely not like your mother-in-law. It's fine because they're not racist, but he is, right? Anyway, you can see it after a while. Takes you a while, but eventually you condemn him in a series of tweets as if he's nothing to do with you. But you can't see how he has possessed your aunt and your mother-in-law and even yourself as you click retweet on a Katie Hopkins video after asking your tired token minority friend if it's okay, knowing that you're going to ignore whatever she actually has to say on the matter, assuring yourself that you normally wouldn't, but you say, "Today, Katie Hopkins has a point because fuck Shamima Begum." And you say very loudly to anyone who will listen that they know you and they know you're not racist, but just this once it's okay for you to give your voice to her never-ending echoes of monetized hatred. And I'm always astounded by how quickly we forget that the war against progress was not only fought by armies or thugs at rallies, but by people who invented reasons to invite hatred into their homes, sitting down with it as it oozes onto their once clean carpets, slurping tea with a hurried whisper of, "Maybe he's just saying what everybody thinks," and before you know it, you and your family sit huddled around hatred, chanting like a cult that you're not racist, but cozying up nice and casual, getting comfortable with casual racism, as if everything being casual makes you better than Hitler or Franco or Farage. And I may be a half-caste, but I'm twice the mind you are, because I never deluded myself into thinking there is an acceptable, cuddly, cozy, casual type of racism. I was on the Twitter recently and I saw this video. And it was, I can't remember exactly where it was titled, it was something like casual racism in Britain. And it was this woman, right, and she was like a teacher or something. And she was, you know, talking about, you know, how she was really shocked and she thought it wasn't really okay that, you know, there were minority students in her classes. And she kept using the term half-caste and I was just like, this bitch, really? I mean, I'm gonna be real to you. I do not know how many times mixed and biracial people have to explain why half caste is offensive and why people shouldn't use it. But you know, it is a term that still is used a lot in England. When I was younger, I used to think people would call me that because they didn't understand that it was bad. They didn't know yet. And so I would be quite lenient. My mother was not. My mother would get very, very angry about it. And now I seem to have taken that sort of, that position myself. It's been several decades of being, you know, people, you know, harmlessly, I'm doing air quotes, you can't see, but I'm doing them, you know, referring to me by that term, you know, oh, we didn't know it was offensive, sorry. Like, I've had that for several decades now, and at this point I'm just like, shut the fuck up, yes you do. Come the fuck on, you fucking know. Unless you've been living under a fucking rock for the last, like, 20 years, you know that it's not acceptable to say that, okay? Stop it, you know? A couple of months ago, it could be a couple of months ago, it could be a couple of weeks, you know how I am with time. Amber Rudd, who is the, she's a Secretary of State for Welfare and things. She used to be the Home Secretary. She of tiny minority in Hastings. She referred to the the shadow Home Secretary, Diane Abbott, as coloured during a radio interview. She then explained she didn't mean it that way. She didn't realise it was offensive or something. I don't know. But how the fuck does a woman become Home Secretary, right? And not realise that coloured is offensive. How does that even happen? It's like, girl, don't do all that. Don't do all that. Are you serious? And I was just like, oh my God. And you see, this is, I suppose, what people mean when they say casual racism. People who didn't mean it, you know, or you know, they're just saying what they think. They don't mean it in a bad way. They didn't mean you, you know, and it's just like, shut the fuck up. Like, I'm just finding it harder and harder to have sympathy and to separate those things, because yes, obviously somebody who accidentally, the air quotes have returned, refers to me as half caste or coloured, even though it's quite clear at this point that they shouldn't, obviously that's not quite the same as, you know, somebody wanting me to die because of my race. But at this point, I'm done having sympathy for them. I'm done making excuses and allowing for them to just move on from it. It's like, just for fuck's sake, you're a grown adult. Take some responsibility for yourself. If, do you know what I mean? It's like, fucking educate yourself. Jesus Christ. I mean, you know, as somebody who has kind of been on the other side of, you know, sort of, you know, oh, I didn't realise we weren't allowed to say that anymore, racism, and, you know, sort of psychotic white nationalist racism, I've really seen sort of both ends. And while obviously one of them is a more immediate threat to my life, both of them hurt, both of them, you know, it stays with you and it builds up, because you go through life knowing that there are people who don't think that you deserve the same respect, you know. And I think that does align. See, that's the thing. People will call it casual. They'll say it's harmless or whatever. You know, these people who will, you know, still continue using racial slurs even though they're told not to. People who, you know what I mean, those kinds of people. Yes, they're not threatening to burn my house down because they're so offended that they have to live next door to a person of a different race to them. And yes, maybe they're not spitting at me in the street or, you know, attacking me or whatever. But they are still not willing to give me the respect of not referring to me with an offensive term or not making wild stereotypes about my race and my culture and where I come from, you know what I mean? And I think that aligns, because that's something you find in both kinds of strains of racism, if I'm to entertain the delusion that there are two, and really I don't, but for the sake of the argument, you know. So people who say that it's harmless, I don't think it is. I think it comes from a place of disrespect and, frankly, cruelty. Because, I mean, these people are not stupid. Let's be real. It's not like there is no information out there. You know, if you go back to the Amber Rudd thing, it's not like there isn't a ton of information available as to why calling a black woman coloured is offensive. right? You know, just random people on the street know that. Somebody who was the fucking Home Secretary should know that. But she didn't. She didn't bother to learn. She didn't bother to educate herself because she thought it didn't matter, you know? So I just, I don't know. I think I may have talked about him before, I don't remember. But there's a guy, Patrick Harvey, and he's in the Green Party in Scotland. He's a really great guy. And he said that at this point, we should have far less tolerance for intolerant people. And I mean, yeah, I'm down with that. I mean, where does it end? For fuck's sake. I mean, do we just allow this to go on and on and on? I mean, is this what we fucking fought for, you know? There are people that came before me who fought for me to have the same rights, the same opportunities, the same chances, the same life, the same respect. Am I supposed to just sit here and pretend like that never happened and allow just such blatant disrespect? You know, I don't think so. I don't see it for me. Oh, I'm getting mad. I should read something nice after this. It's hard because, you know, I grew up being really the only person like me. If you've never been to Kent, let me tell you, most of my time living there, I knew maybe a handful of people that looked anything remotely like me. And it was hard. It was one of the things I loved about living in London because there were so many different kinds of people. And I felt less alone, you know? And, oh, there are some loud cats outside. Maybe they're angry about racism too. We support you, cats. Yay. but anyway, where was I? Something. Oh, yes. I was in London. It was a lot better. There was a lot more people, of all kinds of people. I think, you know, some people, they make fun of people in London because they're like, oh, you know, they're just, you know, diversity gone mad. They're always, you know, but I don't see why that's a bad thing. I don't see why it's bad to learn about other cultures and learn about other countries and, you know, have respect for other people around you. I don't get why it's somehow a negative to speak to people and say, okay, which terminology do you prefer? What do you like to be called? You know, is it okay if I do this or say this, and actually listen to people? And if they say no, respect that and say, okay, that's fine. You know, I don't get what's so bad about respecting other people. But apparently, that's something that's very beyond a lot of people. And I mean, that's sad, but what can you do? Apart from throw milkshakes at them, apparently. That's an option we have. But I found that whole discourse very interesting because there were some people who were like, oh, you mustn't do that. You should go out and you should vote against people like Farage and Robinson and that Carl Benjamin cretin. But I mean, okay, fair enough. Robinson and Benjamin are probably not going to get elected, let's be real. But let me tell you something. I'm actually recording this before the elections. It's going to go out after the election, so maybe I'll be wrong and that'll be wonderful. But Farage is probably going to get back in, despite the fact that he barely turns up to the European Parliament as it is, and he's a fucking terrible human being. But I mean, this is the Southeast, right? And we're not lumped in with London for these elections, so we don't get to benefit from them having a bit more taste. So Farage is probably going to get back in, real talk. So me voting against him doesn't actually stop him, because he gets another term in the European Parliament to barely turn up, take a bunch of money for not turning up because he still gets paid, and just sort of tour the country being a horrible shit, right? And so, you know, excuse me if I want to laugh at someone throwing a milkshake at him. Like, this is a man who goes on rallies saying hateful things about people that gets people legitimately hurt. Let's not sit here and act like there hasn't been a rise in hate crime in the last few years in the UK, and that it has nothing to do with him, because it does. Him, Katie Hopkins, Tommy Robinson, the whole fucking lot of them have that responsibility on their shoulders. Are they going to acknowledge it? No, but it's still there. So I know, realistically, that he's probably going to get back in. So I'm gonna fucking laugh at videos of him being drenched in milkshake. I am. I don't care if that makes me mean or a bad person. I'm gonna take my humour where I can get it, because the real world is fucking terrifying. Okay, this has absolutely nothing to do with the last poem I was just talking about, or the last thing I was just talking about, but I did feel that it was only proper and correct for me to tell you that, even though I said on the last episode that I had not watched and would probably not watch Game of Thrones, I have started watching Game of Thrones. Listen, a week is a long time in, well, everything. So at the time I'm recording this, I am on season 4. I'm having a wonderful time. I love the dragons. I love the dragon lady. I like Tyrion. He's my favourite. He reminds me of my friend. I like... who else do I like? Oh, I like the guy. I can't remember the character's name, but the actor was in Black Mirror in the episode where they're all being blackmailed into doing bad things. And he's in that. He's the Mindy guy. But I can't remember the actor's name or the character. So, my bad. But anyway, I'm having a good time watching Game of Thrones. So, you know, maybe... you know, as it relates to what I was saying last week, maybe I would actually enjoy being married as well. I don't know. But we'll see. But yes, I have joined in with the rest of society and I am watching Game of Thrones. Maybe I will eventually get round to the final season that everybody is apparently so angry about. I'll let you know. I used to say, with such extravagant flair, that you were a monstrous mix of the sweetest and most special things on the pretty planet that we call home, torturing my pages with the constant mention of your name, convinced that you were the source of light and life as summer died, echoes of your eyes falling like leaves as I clung to time alone, because despite my unearned high opinion of you, you would never have the courage to commit. You killed summer. I think perhaps the worst part of love is being delusional about the person that you're in love with. You know, you convince yourself that they're somebody different to who they really are. You give them these accolades, these titles that don't actually reflect the truth, because you want it to be true. You want them to be the person that in your head and in your mind they are, you know, because everyone wants to be in love with the perfect person, I guess. okay, babies, it's time to go. But there'll be another episode next week, so it's okay. You can visit my website, which is jenniferwan.com. And there's also free stuff there, like audio and video and stuff to read. So that's fun. You can pre-order my new book, Old Brown Eyes Is Back, on Amazon, Barnes and Noble. There's like a bunch of other places where you can get it. If ever in doubt, just go to my website and you can find all the links for it there. You can find me on social media with the username Miss J Squared. And if you enjoy the show, you can support the show and other projects that I do on Patreon, Ko-fi, or PayPal. And the links for that are in the description or my website. On my website, I should say. So there's lots of exclusive stuff that you get through support through those. But the details are all on my website, so. You can also find some new videos this week. There'll be one Monday and one Friday, but there'll also be early stuff for subscribers on Patreon and things like that. Lots of love to my friend Amanda from Patreon. And I will see you next week. Good night, my love.